You want to take it from the top?
Yeah, let's try it.
Okay.
He will rock you. He will roll you. Baby, don't you know? My heat will move your soul.
I think we should repeat that again.
Feel, 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 feel. Feel my heat.
Feel my heat. Yeah, it's definitely cool. Let's lay it down. Nick?
You want to lay it down?
Are we rolling on the rehearsal?
Still rolling. Do it one more time. Ready?
Hello. Hello. Hello, everybody. Okay, I had to check my level for a second. All right. You're listening to In the Loop on freeradioseic.org. And I thank you very much for listening. What you just heard in the pre-music, you heard Little Marvin Gaye, If I Could Build a Bridge. Elvis Costello, Accidents Will Happen. Then you just heard The Commitments with Mustang Sally. I think it was Wilson Pickett who died over the break, so that was an honor. And then what we've got going on right now, we heard intro, Feel the Heat, with John C. Reilly and Mark Wahlberg from Boogie Nights, and right now is playing Machine Gun by the Commodores, also from Boogie Nights. So we're back! Everyone's back. Well, not everybody, obviously, since they're only like 12 DJs starting right now, but everyone's going to come back. How was your break? You don't have a microphone, so you can't answer, but... Uh-huh. Oh, good. I'm glad it was good. Great. In the Loop is a weekly news and talk and bitching and... Cetera radio show put out from the lucky 13th floor of the Michigan building at the School of the Art Institute of Chicago. My name is Kristen Barrick. I am your host. And there is a website that goes along with this show, and it is at MT, the letter N, the letter T, outburst.blogspot.com. You can also find that by going to the show info for this show, In the Loop. And you can also leave comments and all sorts of stuff. I was going to be here earlier, but some stuff happened over break, so I had a longer stay in Montana than I was expecting. But, you know, it was Montana. It was warm. It was nice. It was warmer than here. but, you know, things happen. It is February 1st, 2006. I'd like to say happy birthday to my dad. My father, it's his birthday today. He is older. I know how old he is because I know when they were born, but... Oh, actually, yeah. He turned 60 today. So happy birthday, my dad. And if you didn't want me to say what your age was over internet radio, all the many listeners on internet radio, then I'm sorry. And I need money. What we're going to have today for today's show, obviously the State of the Union was last night. And so we're going to have some news about that in our top stories. Gonna do a little news summary, then we're gonna have the weekly podcast by the Democratic senator from Illinois, Barack Obama. I'm going to play that for you. And that's regarding the Samuel Alito confirmation hearing and eventually the confirmation vote yesterday. And he is now on the Supreme Court. And there is only one woman left. Let's see how long she will last. And then we might have a guest later on. He's not here right now, but hopefully he'll show up. And we'll have a nice conversation, and he's going to read us a piece of poetry. Otherwise, he'll be on next week. And then the theme for tonight's show is things that I don't know. Because over the break, I just realized that there are so many things that I have that I don't understand and that I don't know. And doing the show, I want to learn these things. And I think that a lot of other people, a lot of students and just young people or whatever you want to call us, don't understand these things. But we're kind of scared to admit it. So I'm going to go through a long list. Well, not, it's an entertaining list of political and cultural and mostly political and some relationship stuff that I just don't understand. I don't get it. And we're going to try to solve those questions this semester with this show, the little investigation. So to start it all off, and again, thank you very much for tuning in. I podcast this later on, and so if you're listening via that, thank you so much. But you really should be listening live, because it's so much better. You can call in and you can test my knowledge of the mixer and the telephone system. And when I say test, I really mean test it. You can call area code 312-345-3805. That is the phone number for this goofy phone right over there. And when I say goofy, I mean it's actually Goofy. There's Goofy. He's sitting. He's sleeping. He apparently doesn't enjoy the show very much. That doesn't really say much for us. Stupid Goofy. All right. Anyways, we're going to get to the news summary. I'm in a class this semester. This is not part of the news summary. that is writing for the school paper. And in our first class, we went around and we talked about where people got their news from, got their information from. And a lot of people didn't really get it from anywhere, which is perfectly understandable, but it's perfectly fine. It's a little disappointing, but that just leaves you plenty of room to grow. And when I heard that in class, and unfortunately I had to talk first, and so when he asked me that, I'm like, oh, well, I wake up to CNN in the morning, and then I put it on mute, and then I read the closed captioning for part of the day while I listen to podcasts and the radio and Air America, and then I read magazines, and I read some overseas newspapers, and blah, 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 blah. Yeah, I thought that I didn't mean to shine the apple of the teacher, but that's how it felt afterwards. But again, it's perfectly fine. And if anything, admitting that you don't get your news from anywhere, that's admitting there's a problem is the first step. That's something that we all need to learn, including our president. All right, top stories. Last night was the State of the Union. President Bush appeared on the House floor Tuesday night to deliver the State of the Union. Quote, America is addicted to oil, unquote, Bush stated in his 52-minute speech, the shortest of his career. After a shaky year of falling poll numbers, rising casualties, criticized disaster response and failed policies, the State of the Union speech and its following roadshow are seen as challenges by the American people that Bush has to win as this critical election year kicks off. The speech, in its at least 20th draft, did not set forth any grand new policies like last year's, where reforming Social Security was the centerpiece. Instead, Bush set a goal to reduce U.S. oil imports from the Middle East 75% by the year 2025. Later in the broadcast, we'll have a selection from a Slate.com podcast with more comments on the state of the union. But in the speech, he did make some strange reference to, along the lines of stem cell research, about banning the creation of human-animal hybrids. Go back to, like, find a transcript on the web, or if you listen to the Rachel Maddow show from today, I think she talks a little bit about that. So apparently, you know, the creation of werewolves are a sincere problem right now in the world. That was the baseball on steroids kind of weird comment from the speech last night. My only question is, what will Bat Boy do? I guess I'm going to have to buy a couple issues of the Globe to make sure that I got the whole handle on the Bat Boy situation. Also, at the State of the Union, Cindy Sheehan was arrested, and she is thinking about running for Congress. Cindy Sheehan, the mother of a soldier killed in Iraq and a vocal anti-war activist, was arrested at the State of the Union Tuesday night for wearing a T-shirt displaying the number of soldiers killed in Iraq, which is 2,245, and then with a question asking how many more. She had been invited to the speech by Democratic Representative of California, Lynn Woolsey. Descriptions of the event vary, but all agree that Sheehan was seated and then took off her jacket or sweater to reveal the T-shirt. After being asked to cover the shirt, she refused and was very polite as she was led out of the House of Representatives, or the House of the People, the Spectator Gallery, and arrested for, quote, unlawful conduct, unquote. Sheehan's version of the events are available at michaelmoore.com. Later on, after I wrote that, it was reported that a senator or a representative's wife was also removed, but not arrested, for wearing a long-sleeve T-shirt saying, support our troops. So when you walk back, when you walk in Chicago past the Tribune Building and they have all those big signs about the First Amendment Museum, and it says, can I wear whatever I want? Take a Sharpie. Okay, don't really, but take a Sharpie and then write no, because that's your answer. Next, Samuel Alito sworn in as Associate Justice in time to attend the State of the Union. By a mostly partisan vote of 58 to 42, Samuel Alito was confirmed on Tuesday to replace the retiring Sandra Day O'Connor on the Supreme Court. O'Connor was considered a swing vote on the court in many important issues, including abortion. During confirmation hearings, Alito would not say that Roe versus Wade was, quote, settled law, unquote, as John Roberts did, a phrase that comforted many pro-choice groups' fears about future abortion cases to come to the court. His view of limits on presidential powers were also vague and seemed to leave many doors open to future litigation about President Bush's secret wiretapping program. Many liberal and progressives' opinions are that this confirmation pushes the Supreme Court to the right and that it will stay that way for a considerable long time because of the young age of both Chief Justice John Roberts and Alito. Amongst the first cases this court will take up after the winter break is over regards the legality of a late-term abortion bill. There is only one remaining female Supreme Court justice on the court, Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg. And we make up how much, what percent of the population do we make up? And as a reminder, Roe versus Wade was last upheld in the case Planned Parenthood versus Casey in 1992 by an incredibly small margin. The vote was 5-4. And Bush has now replaced two Supreme Court justices. To that, as a woman, I was really debating putting up for my next advertisements for the show to be you for a poster or a sticker to say, you let Roe versus Wade get overturned. Because not paying attention to these things lets this happen. Next, the Democratic filibuster attempt falls short. After the confirmation hearings concluded, the nomination of a Supreme Court justice goes to the Senate floor for debate. There, a vote must be taken to close that debate and proceed to a yay or nay vote on the nomination. The filibuster, written into an idealist vision of government with Jimmy Stewart using it in the classic film Mr. Smith Goes to Washington, is a tool used by the minority in an issue to delay a vote by continuing this debate indefinitely. Senators John Kerry and Ted Kennedy led the charge for a filibuster on the Alito nomination, the only semi-probable chance the Democrats had to stop the nomination in a Republican-controlled Congress. When the vote to end debate came to the floor, the senators fell short of what was needed, which was to reduce the vote in favor to end the debate from 3/5 to less than that. Many Republicans are mocking the Democrats for attempting such a gesture, which they see as futile. Other Democrats are upset at the numerous senators who voted no on Alito, yet did not support this filibuster, saying that such a choice makes their no vote an empty political gesture. Freshman Senator from Illinois, Barack Obama, voted in favor of the filibuster and voted no on the confirmation. Unfortunately, my senator from Montana, Senator Max Baucus, voted no on the confirmation, but voted in favor of ending debate. In Iraq news, ABC World News co-anchor Bob Woodruff and cameraman Doug Voigt have returned to the U.S. after being severely injured by an IED, improvised explosive device, while traveling with the lead vehicle of a convoy outside of Baghdad. All of the news stations are covering this situation, as it's the latest high-profile injury. Yesterday, Coretta Scott King, the widow of civil rights legend Martin Luther King, died in Mexico, leaving behind an amazing history of involvement in the civil rights movement, women's rights, and civil disobedience. After the assassination of her husband, Coretta Scott King became a living symbol of him and the message of equal rights and nonviolent civil disobedience. Her last public appearance was a few weeks ago during Martin Luther King Day. She was 78. Now, over the past few weeks, there was new tapes by Osama bin Laden and the number two out of all the number twos of Al-Qaeda, Al-Zawahiri. I will someday get these pronunciations. Al-Zawahiri. And yes, they're bad. Yes, they offer a truce, but often a truce is just a warning that they're going to attack again. But here are my weird feelings about this. I really wish they would stop, not only because, yes, bad people, evil, you know, I wish they would die. I wish that we had caught them. But they hurt the Democrats so bad. Instead of it showing that we haven't caught them yet and that the Bush administration, the whole dead or alive thing, totally didn't work. And Bush's comment a few years ago saying, I don't know where he is and I don't really care, that has caused him to continue on getting, you know, dialysis treatment in a cave. He's still not there. So instead of showing that obviously something has gone wrong because these people aren't captured, it just kind of makes the Democrats look bad, because they're really, in view of Bush, they're on the same side. I seriously think that tape right before the election really tilted things towards Bush. I don't know how they were before, but it just kind of signed, sealed, and delivered the election to them more than, you know, Ohio did. Because the Democrats are still not strong on defense. And again, there's this additional problem of the Democrats, we have things in common with the terrorists. We both don't like the Bush administration and what they're doing. We got to get around that somehow. It's really bad. And I don't know if anyone's ever said that before, but whenever that comes out, I'm just like, oh God, okay. Can't you just shut up until after the election? Or please don't talk while we have things that we want to talk about. There's my special guest. All right. And just in time, I'm going to put on this Slate.com podcast covering the State of the Union.
Whose addiction? Bush's surprisingly partisan speech, written by John Dickerson. George Bush didn't go through a recovery program when he quit drinking, but surely he knows that the first step to shucking any dependency is admitting the problem. In his big speech, he attempted to do just that when he delivered the evening's most memorable line.
America is addicted to oil, which is often imported from unstable parts of the world.
This was a switch from May of 2001, when Ari Fleischer, the president's spokesman, said that the right to consume massive energy resources was an American way of life. I wasn't expecting any great departure after hearing Bush advisors and allies talk all day about security and optimism and about how the president was going to change the tone again. But Bush did change the subject, at least a bit. Tomorrow, we're all going to be talking about cellulosic ethanol from corn stalks and switchgrass. Even if some of the president's proposals sounded like futuristic gobbledygook, we now seem poised for a national debate about American energy dependence. That's more than we've come to expect from these dreary annual clapfests. Democrats might actually engage on this topic instead of responding in the purely political way they did to last year's Social Security proposal. For a president who came from the oil business and who still has many friends and backers in the industry, putting this initiative at the top of his agenda took some guts. On the other hand, Bush put his case in a very Bushian way, presenting it as a pain-free alternative to the awful status quo. Only the corn stalk will suffer as we remake a huge sector of the economy and convert to clean, politically innocent fuel sources. None of us have to trade in our SUVs, drive less, or turn down the thermostat. The president says that in 6 years, cars using the new ethanol will be competitive with gas-burning ones. By 2025, he pledges, America can reduce its dependence on Middle East oil by 75%. His aides argue that technology makes this all possible. It sounds too good to be true, and it almost certainly is. And in that sense, Bush's dramatic new energy proposal had a very familiar ring. In his last State of the Union address, he outlined a bold plan for overhauling Social Security. He made private accounts sound great. He talked about the power of compound interest. He never talked about the costs of creating individual accounts or the trade-offs required for reform. I'm already feeling a little tricked by this speech, not because there wasn't much talk about the austere budget cuts that are coming in the next few days. I'm suspicious because of all the pre-speech talk about how the president would push for a new civil tone. I assumed he would offer a more conciliatory one. Instead, Bush was harsher and more partisan than last year, when he was hoping to persuade some Democrats to support his signature proposal. He telegraphed his punches at the top of the speech, where he framed the choices facing the country. In 2005, this was how he put it, quote, Members of Congress, the choices we make together will answer that question. Over the next several months, on issue after issue, let us do what Americans have always done and build a better world for our children and our grandchildren, unquote. Last night, he framed the choices in more starkly political terms, as he did during his 2004 election year State of the Union speech. Here he is last night.
We will choose to act confidently in pursuing the enemies of freedom, or retreat from our duties in the hope of an easier life. We will choose to build our prosperity by leading the world economy, or shut ourselves off from trade and opportunity. In a complex and challenging time, the road of isolationism and protectionism may seem broad and inviting, yet it ends in danger and decline.
In 2005, Bush cast himself as groping for solutions to national problems together with Democrats. Last night, he depicted those who oppose him as lazy, retreating, and negative.
Yet there is a difference between responsible criticism that aims for success and defeatism that refuses to acknowledge anything but failure. Hindsight alone is not wisdom, and second-guessing is not a strategy.
He welcomes criticism in theory, but in practice he sees it all as defeatism, second-guessing, and 20/20 hindsight. Politics is about defining your enemy. That's what the president did in his 2006 State of the Union. But change the tone? This year, there can't have been a person in the room who took that commitment seriously. That was Bush's surprisingly partisan speech, written by John Dickerson. For Slate.com, I'm Andy Bowers.
It's the Onion Radio News. A really fun toy has been banned after killing three stupid kids. This is Doyle Redland reporting. The Wizco Toy Company of Montclair, New Jersey, has voluntarily recalled 245,000 Aqua Assault Robo-Fighters after three dumb kids managed to kill themselves playing with the popular toy and ruining the fun for everyone else. Wizco President Alvin Cassidy.
Now we have to do a full recall and halt production on what was a really awesome toy. What a waste.
Each of the deaths was determined to be the result of gross misuse of the toy, an incredibly cool device that could shoot both plastic missiles and long jets of water simultaneously. Doyle Redland for The Onion Radio News.
Sponsored by Chili's. Hurry in for Chili's new grilled Southwest combinations. Come on, live a little.
Germany was having trouble. What a sad, sad story. Needed a new leader to restore its former glory. Where, oh, where was he?
Where could that man be?
We looked around, and then we found the man for you and me. And now it's
springtime for Hitler and Germany. Deutschland is happy and gay.
We're marching to a faster pace. Look out, here comes the master race.
Springtime for Hitler and Germany.
Born in Dusseldorf, and that is why they call me Rolf.
Don't be stupid, be a smarty. Come and join the Nazi party.
All right, that that was, what was that? What we had there was just, we had Springtime for Hitler from the producers. You know, it just reminded me of the State of the Union. And before that, we had the Slate.com coverage about the State of the Union and their comments on that. And before, I accidentally played one of the Onion's new podcasts. They've been putting out these Onion Radio News podcasts, and they've shot to the top of the iTunes charts and have been commented on by NPR and such. And they're hilarious, short little bits. It's just, it's fantastic. I love it. Okay, we're going to go to the freshman senator from Illinois, who is Barack Obama, and he reaches out and does a weekly podcast that usually varies between about 8 and 12 minutes or so about an issue going on that week and something that he's involved in. And he's a very prominent member of the Senate, and the Democratic leadership have been using him in a good way to kind of spearhead a lot of their image concerns and like for new programs and stuff, and they've had him out. And so I like to put out, like to play his podcast, because we do live in Chicago, those of us at the School of the Art Institute, and hopefully more of those listening. And so it's only right for us to listen to this and to make sure that he's doing what we want him to do. And I personally agree with what he talks about in this podcast. All right.
Obama. And today is Tuesday, January 31st, 2006. As many of you may be aware, today is the vote to confirm Judge Alito to the United States Supreme Court. You know, there's been a lot of discussion in the country about how the Senate should approach the confirmation process. There are some who believe that the president, having won the election, should have complete authority to appoint his nominee, and that the Senate should only examine whether or not the justice is intellectually capable and is nice to his wife, or she's nice to her husband. That once you get beyond issues of intellect and personal character, then there shouldn't be further question as to whether the judge should be confirmed. I disagree with this view. I believe that the Constitution calls for the Senate to advise and consent, that meaningful advice and consent includes an examination of a judge's philosophy, ideology, and record. And when I examine the philosophy, ideology, and record of Judge Samuel Alito, I'm deeply troubled. Now, I have no doubt that Judge Alito has the training and qualifications necessary to serve as a Supreme Court justice. He's a smart guy. There's no indication that he is not a man of good character. But when you look at his record, what is clear is that when it comes to his understanding of the Constitution, he consistently sides on behalf of the powerful against the powerless. If there is a case involving an employer and an employee, and the Supreme Court has not given clear direction, Judge Alito will rule in favor of the employer. If there is a claim between prosecutors and defendants, if the Supreme Court has not already provided a clear rule of decision, then Judge Alito will rule in favor of the state. When it comes to how checks and balances in our system are supposed to operate, the balance of power between the executive branch, Congress, and the judiciary, Judge Alito consistently sides with the notion that a president should not be constrained by either congressional acts or the check of the judiciary. He believes in the overarching power of the president to engage in whatever the president deems to be appropriate policy. As a consequence of this, I'm extraordinarily worried about how Judge Alito might approach issues such as wiretapping, monitoring of emails, or other privacy concerns that we have seen surface over the last several months. In sum, I've seen an extraordinarily consistent attitude on the part of Judge Alito that does not uphold the traditional role of the Supreme Court as a bastion of equality and justice for the United States citizen. And for that reason, I'll be voting against his confirmation. I do hope that if Judge Alito is confirmed, that he proves me wrong. I know that all the senators who are going to be voting against him ardently hope that the Supreme Court continues to serve the vital role that it plays in preserving our liberties. Thank you very much. I will talk to you guys next week. Bye-bye.
All right. That was the Barack Obama podcast that you can find on iTunes as well as on his official page, which is, I believe, obama.senate.gov. Do a search. You'll find it. He's got some great stuff on there. And again, by podcasting, he's openly reaching out for to my generation, to our generation, whatever you want to call it, and keeping people informed about what's going on. All right. As I said earlier, the theme of part of today's show is things that I don't know and that I don't understand. And first, since anyone listening can see the webcam, we have a special guest in the studio. Would you like to say your name and introduce yourself to me and the other person listening?
Well, hello, other person. My name is Nathan Stanton, also known as Imaginathan. And
ooh, I haven't heard that.
Yeah, imagine it. I'm your all-purpose artist, poet, writer, painter, rapper, that sort of thing. So I take these ideas and funnel them into whichever media is immediately accessible.
Very good. And Nathan's here because I met him last year, like a year ago, through my wonderful Australian roommate who I miss dearly, and
Selby.
Yes, Selby. I still drink tea. I got this really cool teapot that looks, it's like made of glass, and you can see it and everything. I'll talk about that later. I'm really excited about it. So, but we met, and he puts out what would you call it? It's not exactly a newsletter, or it's a poetry letter.
Yeah, it's just this compilation of poems. Well, I would email, everyone on my email list basically would get a poem every week from me. And over the semester, last semester, I would write more, compiled them all together, about 50 or so, went to Kinko's, printed them out in a little book, and I like to call myself a published poet now.
There's a line in one of my favorite cartoons, home movies, that one of the characters is teaching a writing class, and she asks, you know, if, like, everyone's experience. And this guy's like, I've been published. It's like, oh, where have you been published before? I've been Xeroxed. Like, oh, okay. You've been Xeroxed, but good. But I mean, in this, I hate phrases like day and age, but you know, you get out what you can get out. And especially in Chicago where things are still competitive, but it's a lot less cluttered than like New York. It's an amazing tool. And just, you know, to put the effort together, or to put out the effort to not only write the poetry, but to put it all together and to have the guts. I don't want anyone to read any of the poetry I've ever written. and to have that is just fantastic. And I know that I've enjoyed seeing your poems every week, because it's always very random. It's like I get this email and it has like a strange heading, which is the name of the poem, and then I open it up and it's just the poem. There's no intro or like, hey, how's it going? Just the poem. And it's so just like simply stated. It's just And it's just this wonderful, like, little nugget of joy that I get every week. And so that's why I invited you. And it's really great. I'm going to have, if you would, read one of your poems on the air.
No problem. This poem I read is Revolution, and it's from earlier. Righteous camp professing unkept maps of a plan unseen, words tipping careen across the ocean, wishing washy criminals would step from behind the desk, but well read. Books too much and too little enough reason without the slightest answer, as if we picked them up for that really, only to escape the vats of acid placed beneath our beds, convincing the truth still lies in a field of lilies everywhere but here. The silence they make opposite noisy city shears, my common good at times, but overcomes the disturbance of my mind, cause I got nothing else. I would have been long gone without his help. My words should end something like a good novel, nothing solved, just entertainment full throttle. But it won't find me my soulmate. It will not determine my fate. It will not shake apple trees for me. It will not lower these degrees. It will imbue me with someone else's thoughts while I try to sort out my own. I want to be smart, though. Why did I ever learn to read? For show? Nah, because creation is what I'm here for, to live for the living and watch the sun slowly warm the ever-present shivering.
Nice job. I'm going to clap. Yeah. If I had a sound effects board like this morning show, it was like a cowbell,
yeah.
Honking horns, audience applause. I'd do that. That's fantastic. I love that line. Oh, and because you just read it, I have to find it again. My words should end something like a good novel, but.
Nothing solved, just entertainment full throttle.
Yeah, I really enjoy that. So tell us about the book.
Well, the book is called Ripe Fire, and it's poetry by me. Ema, that's short for Imaginathan. And it's my painting moniker as well. But it's just this collection of experiences that I've had. Like, I've been writing poetry a while now. Probably as long as I've been painting, but
which is how long?
About 4 to 5 years now. Okay. But painting and poetry are completely different from each other. Like, poetry is more of an immediate medium, while painting is, you have to be more patient with it. So the days where I'm feeling something that I need to get out there, I just sit down and write a poem, and thanks to technology, I can send it to lots of other people, and I always get good feedback. But the core of my poetry is just, it's my heart. You know, it's what I see out in the world and how I see art changing the world in itself. So if a pen is mightier than a sword, then a pen applied to many other surfaces would be even more powerful. But I think just words and language are beautiful. Sometimes it's not enough. Sometimes it makes me want to burn my pages that I write, which I do sometimes. But it's just a beautiful thing to be able to create, to make something that's living, and hope that it lives on. But
what's the kind of response that you've gotten from the friends who you've emailed it to every week?
Most of the time, people, like, they write back and say something sort of like, well, I don't know how to respond to that. Because, like, I just pull these subjects, you know, that I see walking around the loop or, you know, addressing people that's maybe hungry or different things that I'm feeling. So they don't know exactly what to say, but they always, like, keep doing it. It's great, you know. Keep. You should collect these and put them in a book. So
hence the book, which you are just giving out to the people who are interested in it, or
I'll give it to anyone who wants it. So my email address is instant instant@artic.edu, and also I'll get your email address and I can send you the poems I write every week.
Yeah, it's a fantastic list to be on, because it's just so surprising, and it's, you know, the furthest thing from spam. It's like, you know, like at one image
like one email, oh, increase your penis size. And then it's like, oh, poetry. Thank God. Oh, my goodness. And you can email Nathan to get on his list or to find out how you can get his collection of poetry. You can also give me an email or leave a comment on the blog or whatnot, and we can get you hooked up with that. Thank you, Nathan.
No problem whatsoever.
He's going to stay with us while I go through. I don't write poetry. I write lists. For my writing class last semester, I was supposed to write something like, you know, paragraphs, and instead I just wrote lists of things that I did and thought that, like, hey, that's funny. McSweeney's.com, they have lists and they use them all the time. So I thought, there's so many things I don't know, and I want to try to, you know, start this year and figure out, try to understand some of these things, and a lot of things with government and politics, because I'm 26, but I know crap. and when my favorite Air America show, or my favorite radio show in general, Morning Sedition, got canceled late last year, I left a comment about Mark Maron, a comedian, and he was a co-host on that show, about how admitting that you don't know something is showing that you're intelligent. Like, that's the first step to actual knowledge. And so this is me saying that I don't know anything, but also, hey, but I'm smart. And some of the things are a little embarrassing. Some of them don't make sense, but I'm going to go through them and you can comment on them or what have you. Okay, things I don't understand or know. I don't know why politics and religion aren't talked about more. I don't know why so many college students wear political buttons, but historically don't vote or know anything beyond the button. I don't know why I feel inferior around Asian men and women. Riding the elevator in my dorm becomes a very traumatic experience. Just like, I'm not cool. You're smarter than me. I don't understand why public policy... Oh, wait. I don't understand why I feel inferior around students who are dressed, quote, cool. I also don't understand why so many male art students wear incredibly tight jeans.
Because they're girls' jeans.
But, well, that's not an explanation.
Yeah, well, yeah. It's, okay. That's an explanation of how they got so tight.
I mean, like I don't want to see that.
Me either.
I was happy to go back to Montana. I'm like, hey, look, the only tight pants are Wranglers, and those are cowboys, so that's fine, because they actually are cowboys, instead of thinking, oh, this is a cool cowboy hat, I'm going to wear it because it's in. Like, no, I'm going to wear a cowboy hat because I'm a cowboy, because I step in horse shit and cow shit every day. Like, thank you. You are completely justified. Okay. I don't understand why public policy is so infrequently talked about by regular people, including myself. I don't understand why people could be so militant with being a vegetarian or vegan and change their actions because of it, but can't do the same thing with government. I don't understand why questioning members of the government can be called unpatriotic by anyone. I don't understand why admitting ignorance about a subject is seen as so damaging. And in that case, then I'm, you know, ruining myself with this list. Why things can't be considered simultaneously complicated and simple.
That's a good one.
Oh, I mean, it is possible, too. And, like, my ex-boyfriend couldn't understand how I, you know, yes, Walt Disney has, you know, they sell an image that isn't exactly always positive that little people should hear, but riding the teacups is really fun. Can I have both? I say yes. I don't know why people use "you know what I'm saying" like you would use in a conversation as like a conversation buffer. And I consequentially don't understand why those people don't get it when I continuously answer their question with no. There's one guy, especially, who I did this to, and You just kept going. And, like, the art world, it's just, you know, galleries are so less. You know what I'm saying? And I just kept going, no, 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 no. And he wouldn't, yeah. He liked to hear himself talk. I don't understand why there isn't a show on a news network where people actually try to explain and understand issues and even resolve debate. I don't understand why Arrested Development got canceled. I don't know why I'm so affected by the cancellation of Air America's Morning Sedition. I, like, literally cried over break listening to an old show. It was... I don't know why censors bleep the God in God Damn It. I don't know why Midwest rural red staters stereotype blue staters. I also don't know why blue staters stereotype red staters. I don't know what's in the center of the Pentagon. Is it a picnic area? Do they, like, have a play that they put on every week or something? Have kids come in? Because it's just a big open area. No one ever talks about that. I don't know why a person can't win with the truth. I don't know why it's so hard to find the truth. Okay. Dad, Daddy, turn it down.
Don't, cover your ears, children.
Don't listen. I don't know why women let men fuck their breasts. And I don't know what a woman's reaction is supposed to be during this experience. Because honestly, like, me, like, if you're going to do that, then I don't know. I have a space between my toes that's like toe cleavage. It's the same thing. Like, my armpit, that's, you know, the same, even like more space there. I just don't understand that. Okay. Now hopefully my dad will turn back on. I don't know why I can't trust politicians. I don't know why I must trust politicians. I don't know why ignorance about current events and politics is so common, so troubling, and yet so comfortable. I don't know why Osama bin Laden hasn't been captured or killed. I don't know why I can't believe what I read in newspapers, or why I can't believe what I see on TV, or why I can't believe what I read on the internet. I don't know why comedy is so hard to write. I don't know why learning new things makes my head hurt. And I don't know why I'm going to have to pay now for Air America podcasts after next week. And I don't know why I should continue to listen to him at all. Hmm. All right. That's the end of my list. Nathan, is there anything that you'd like to admit that you know nothing about?
Well, I know nothing about life in general.
Oh, you can't just do a blanket comment like that.
Well, I take everything with a grain of salt. Have you ever noticed that it's sort of hard to surprise you nowadays? Does anything surprise you? What surprises you?
You asking me that question? some things, but it's awful because, like, I can always logically kind of plot. Like, it's really hard for me to watch movies because I can... like, see where it's going, and I can guess the plot points really easily.
Yeah, I don't know why people do a lot of certain things, but I guess that's the point of life, is, like, trying to make yourself understand when you have really no reason to. Or, I mean, well, the reason to is just so you can understand, but you have no actual logical information to understand. So I guess that's sort of what wisdom is, a little...
Why is it so hard to get? Okay. It is 7 o'clock. We have to get out of here because there's no next show, but technically I end the broadcast at 7. I'm going to end this with the song Everyone's a Little Bit Racist from Avenue Q. Listen to the song. It's better than the title makes it out. I'd like to thank Nathan very much.
Thank you.
Again, you can reach him at his email address.
instant@arctic.edu.
And that's not instant, but NST at arctic.edu.
Yes, ma'am.
You have been listening to freeradioseic.org. It's the official internet radio station from the School of the Art Institute of Chicago. Or else you've been listening to this in podcast form from kbarrick.podomatic.com. I'd like to thank everybody, and we will see you next week. Hopefully have... I might have the guy who sold me my teapot come in and talk about tea, because my teapot kicks so much ass. All right. We're going to get out of here. Please come back next week. And also stick around for tonight and the rest of the week to listen to the other great shows that are broadcasting here on freeradioseic.org. You can also apply for a show starting this semester. It's very easy, and it's a great time, and this is one of the few opportunities which you'll get to be able to broadcast whatever the hell you want. It's not FCC regulated. You can come in here. It's totally, totally free, totally open. It's incredibly easy. If you come by the 13th floor, there are applications for new shows right outside the door. Or else you can contact anyone at freeradioseic.org for further information. So thank you for listening. I will see you and hear from you next week. And I thank you for listening. Bye.
Say, Kate, can I ask you a question?
Sure.
Well, you know Trekkie Monster upstairs?
Uh-huh.
Well, he's Trekkie Monster and you're Kate Monster.
Right.
You're both monsters.
Yeah.
Are you two related?
What? Princeton, I'm surprised at you. I find that racist.
Well, I'm sorry. I was just asking.
Well, it's a touchy subject. No, not all monsters are related. What are you trying to say, huh? That we all look the same to you?
No,
huh?
No. Oh, not at all. Oh, I'm sorry. I guess that was a little racist.
I should say so. You should be much more careful when you're talking about the sensitive subject of race.
Well, look who's talking.
What do you mean?
What about that special monster school you told me about?
What about it?
Well, could someone like me go there?
No, we don't want people like you.
You see? You're a little bit racist.
Well, you're a little bit too.
I guess we're both a little bit racist.
Admitting it is not an easy thing to do.
But I guess it's true.
Between me and you, I think everyone's a little bit racist. Sometimes. Doesn't mean we go around committing hate crimes. Look around and you will find no one's really colorblind. Maybe it's a fact we all should face. Everyone makes judgments based on race.
No, not big judgments like who to hire or who to buy a newspaper from.
No.
No, just little judgments like thinking that Mexican busboys should learn to speak goddamn English.
Right.
Everyone's a little bit racist today.
So everyone's a little bit racist. Okay. Ethnic jokes might be uncouth, but you laugh because they're based on truth. Don't take them as personal attacks. Everyone enjoys them. So relax.
All right, stop if you've heard this one.
Okay.
All right, there's a plane going down.
Uh-huh.
There's only one parachute, and there's a rabbi, a priest.
And a black guy.
Yeah.
What you talking about, Kate?
You
were telling a black joke.
Well, sure, Gary, but lots of people tell black jokes.
I don't.
Well, of course you don't. You're black. But I bet you tell Polack jokes, right?
Well, sure I do. Those stupid Polacks.
Now, don't you think that's a little racist?
Well, damn. I guess you're right.
You're a little bit racist.
Well, you're a little bit too.
We're all a little bit racist.
I think that I would have to agree with you.
We're glad you do.
It's sad, but true. Everyone's a little bit racist.
All right.
All right.
All right.
All right. Bigotry has never been exclusively white.
If we all could just admit that we are racist a little bit, even though we all know that it's wrong, maybe it would help us get along.
Oh, Christ, do I feel good.
Now there was a fine, upstanding black man.
Who?
Jesus Christ.
But Gary,
Jesus was white.
No, Jesus was black.
No, Jesus was white.
No, I'm pretty sure Jesus was black.
Guys, guys! Jesus was Jewish.
Hey, guys, what are you laughing about?
Racism!
Cool!
Man, come back here! You take all these recycled birds!
What's that mean?
Recyclables.
Hey, don't laugh at her! How many languages do you speak?
Oh, come off it, Brian!
Everyone's a little bit racist.
I'm not!
Oh, no?
Nope. Huh. How many Oriental wives have you got?
What? Brian!
Brian, buddy, where you been? The term is Asian American.
I know you are no intending to be, but calling me Oriental, offensive to me.
I'm sorry, honey. I love you.
And I love you.
But you're racist, too.
Yeah, I know. Jews have all the money and the whites have all the power. And I'm always in taxi cab with Liva who's a shower.
Me too.
Me too.
I can't even get a taxi.
Everyone's a little bit racist. It's true. But everyone's just about as racist as you. If we all could just admit
a little bit racist.